I think I speak for everyone here when I say, huh?
Here we are now. Entertain us.
Made of fam.
We never promised.
And the terror that flaps in the night.
Now this is not going to be pretty. We're talking violence, strong language, adult content.
And the rhinestone on the jumpsuit of justice. I am Darkwing Duck.
Captain Hammer threw a car at my head.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
You do too much. You're not Superman, you know.
Good evening, everybody. I am Kevin.
I'm Batman.
Thank you, Dana. This is the Made of Fail Superhero Super Special, Episode 4. Thank you all for listening. We are joined tonight by one of my best friends, Adam. Say hi, Adam.
Hi, Adam.
Thank you. So professional, right there. You're gonna go.
I can breathe in space.
You're going to go very far in the radio business.
My parents are dead.
Probably right into a brick wall.
Thank you, Bat Dana. Anyway, this is the Made of Fail Superhero Super Special.
I'm Batman.
Are you going to keep doing that the entire show?
Would you like
if
me
she
to?
She doesn't, I'm going to.
I hate you all.
We love you, Kevin.
Sure. All right. Incidentally, we do have, since we actually do have listeners now, more than one, more than Jillian, more than our parents, and more than a random guy in Minnesota.
More than meets the eye.
Yeah, there's a point where that just gets old.
All right, I'm sorry.
You're...
That point is 5 years in the past.
Thank you. All right.
How can you say that to Batman?
I'm not saying that to Batman. I'm saying that to Dynamite.
Or... Secret identity? Dude!
Come on, be cool, Adam, be cool.
Anyway, we have da 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 fan mail!
Thank
and
you.
That's awesome.
All right.
Oh, by the way, I should mention before we get into fan mail that I'm moving to New Orleans at the end of the month, and God knows when I'll have internet access again, so Adam, better get used to him, because he's going to be me for a couple of episodes. And in case everybody starts rioting and saying, hey, we want the hot chick, Kevin's friend Tessa is also probably going to be taking my place and filling my shoes.
Yep. So don't worry.
I don't wear heels, so they're very comfortable.
Yes. So probably
can't. Anyway, you want me to read off the fan mail?
Let's hit us with the fan mail.
We have something from Raz and Beat Boy. Ahem. I saw your post on Scans Daily directing peeps to your podcast, so I thought I would check it out. I like your banter. Why, thank you. If I could make a suggestion, maybe try and break it up a bit every now and then with something other than you guys talking, just to prevent your audience's attention waning.
He does realize this is radio, right?
Well, what they fail to realize, we do have other talents. Kevin is actually an accomplished mime, and I do interpretive dance. Adam is a renowned dog walker. So why don't we all just take a moment, and let's demonstrate. Kevin, go! Multiple takes.
Ta-da!
I'm really impressed how you stuck the dismount there.
Well...
Adam, this is a family show.
Honestly.
Stop censoring my art.
I was told.
Hey, man. Art is made to be censored, otherwise it's... No, I'm kidding.
I was totally getting a Pac-Man bleep right there.
Oh, and they wished us well, Kevin. I notice you still have a cough, but I'm all better.
I'm mostly better. I've I've just got the remnants of this cough that is very slowly going away. There's stuff at work that's aggravating it, so construction.
Yeah, I had
on
a
my
problem
floor.
Too, but I ended up just getting a full blood transfusion from my cousin Bruce Banner. I'm sure there will be no side effects whatsoever.
Oh, completely none at all. How's your law exams going on anyway? You gonna make the bar this year?
Man, I've been hitting the bar.
Ah, even better. Actually, before we continue on with the Superhero Super Special, we do actually have the results of the web poll from last week, or 2 weeks ago, or however long ago that was. If you remember, the web poll from last episode was, what was your favorite classic video game moment, and could you describe it for us? And we had a couple different responses from that. Jillian mentioned Donkey Kong Country from the Super Nintendo, which is better than Super Nintendo, but only just.
It's Nintendiosic.
Exactly.
Nintendo-esque.
That was actually a pretty awesome game, especially for the system it was released for.
Get the video cassette that came with it that explained how they did all the little graphic things?
I didn't, actually. I got the game used and it didn't come with that. I'll have to check that out.
My copy of Donkey Kong Country actually it was labeled as Donkey Kong Country, but it ended up being Mario Kart. We had to take it back to Circuit City.
Lame.
It was. So here I am getting ready to really enjoy collecting bananas and all that good stuff, and I turn it on and I'm playing Mario Kart and I'm wondering what the heck's going on.
Yeah, did you use it the blue shell on them?
Beg your pardon?
Did you use the blue shell on them?
Oh, yeah. It turns out Kremlings really hate blue.
Really?
Wow. I think that's the first recorded case of Pwnage.
Excellent.
So anyway, so what did Jillian share with us with regards to DKC?
She actually didn't have a favorite moment. She had trouble with the final boss, but aside from that, it was just the mention of Donkey Kong Country was her favorite classic game.
What else we got?
Random Minnesota Man had one of these days. I'm actually gonna use your name and stop calling
it's
you Random.
Noel.
I like Random Minnesota Man. it's his superpower. Okay.
Oh, okay.
He protects St. Paul with the power of random chaos theory.
That's beautiful. Oh, we've got a listener for life now.
I am amazed that I remembered the capital of Minnesota. All those years of watching MST3K have finally paid off.
Yes.
What with that there southern education you got?
Oh, now we're going to get into the southern thing. That's so original.
You talk funny, so we're going to make fun of you.
You're going to New Orleans on purpose. They have hurricanes there, you know.
Yeah, I know. They taste good.
Well, anyway, Random Minnesota Man has two, actually, that going for the obscurity factor here. We had Bonk's Adventure for the TurboGrafx-16.
I remember that.
It was on the original NES, too. I know because I played it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I think I remember playing that as well, it's been so long. The only thing I remember from that, and it might not be this, it's about a headbutting caveman who had his own side-scrolling adventures. Noel says it's easily on par with the early adventures of Mario. The only thing I remember of that, if it is that same game, was the fact that you, to pull yourself up from a cliff, you used your teeth.
Oh, yeah, you're
that
right.
Was that game? Okay, then
yeah,
I'm remembering it correctly.
I never even played it. I never even had a TG-16, so go figure.
Actually,
but I remember
believe
there were
that,
a lot of ads.
I believe that game actually caused the Great Dennis Strike of 1990.
The what, huh?
The Great Dentist Strike, you know, where every... dentists in the Northern Hemisphere just decide, hey, we're not going to take this crap if video games are going to tell kids, hey, it's cool, we're just going to hang from ledges by our bicuspids. So they went down south to Mexico and just partied in Tijuana for a couple months.
Yeah, and but once Siesta Time got interrupted by the scabs coming, they got to work and clocked back in at 2:30.
Meanwhile, simultaneously, Jack Thompson takes his first case.
Actually, I think that was a Joseph Lieberman case.
Okay.
Anyway, the second one that he mentioned was Sewer Shark for the Sega CD. Anybody remember the Sega CD?
Yeah.
I tried to pull it out of my mind.
The Angry Video Game Nerd did a whole thing on it, but I never played it. I was a Nintendo girl.
It was kind of interesting. The Sega CD, if I remember correctly, had Nights into Dreams, which was just an astounding game that they're actually in production of a sequel to as we speak. Finally, it has been confirmed there is a new Nights game coming. But anyway, Sewer Shark for the Sega CD is a rail shooter, which he enjoyed because of the live-action segments.
That probably took 30 years to load.
Yeah, probably. And there's one more from, I think this is one of your friends, Dana. Sora50.
I have friends? Devin!
Devin. Okay. Zelda 2 for the, original Nintendo Entertainment System. The side-scroller Zelda with other RPG elements. You gained experience points, you learned spells, you gained levels. That was a really fun game. It got really hard at some points.
Yeah, it did. I have a grudge against that game, and I'll tell you why. And I think I even mentioned that to Devin in response to this. There's a part at the end where you're in the Great Palace, and the second-to-last boss is this giant flying blue bird thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only possible way you can hit him is with the Thunder Spell. By the time you get there, you've already used Fairy and Shield and Jump and all kinds of crap, and you're down to, like, nothing. And if you don't hit this guy with Thunder, which takes, like, a ton of magic, you can't hit him, and at that point there is no way to replenish your magic, which was the biggest design flaw in that entire game, and it endlessly pissed me off, because to this day I haven't been able to get past him, because, I mean, if you're going to have magic points, for God's sake, take a cue from Final Fantasy and have ethers or something that will allow you to get your magic back, especially when it's the only frickin' way you can hit this boss.
I will agree with you there. Definitely there.
Okay. I think we just figured out why Dana was in therapy for a while.
I'm still in therapy. I'm the angriest girl gamer you've ever heard. I should have my own theme song.
Well, you could, but then there's copyright infringement, and we don't want that.
No, I love the nerd too much. Alright, hey, is that all we got, or
shall we
share?
That's all we had. That's all we had.
Well, what the hell? Let's share our own personal experiences.
Alright.
Well, Adam, share.
Oh, Adam, yes.
My favorite video game moment has to be pretty much the entirety of Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. It was the first game that I really got into, because I've been playing, like, random games since then. I never really got into them to any extent, but Ocarina of Time was the first game that I really sat down like, okay, this is pretty much the most awesome thing ever. Especially the last fight against Ganon. I spent at least a solid hour and a half wailing on him with the maximum sword, the big Goron sword.
I loved that
before I realized that I had to use the Master Sword, because it never occurred to me to use the small Dinky Sword when I had a big two-hand Zweihander or something. It just never occurred to me.
Oh, don't go there, Dana. Don't go there, Dana. Don't go there, Dana. Okay, I'm done. Kevin, how about you, man?
Well, yeah, okay, I'll go there. You know, Adam, it's not the the size of the sword, it's how you use it.
I meant your favorite video game moment.
Oh,
but if you
want
a little Adam's manhood, you can do that whenever you want.
Not that it takes much.
Well, you
want me to just put the ball on the tee for you, Kevin?
Well, you put it over the plate. How can I not take a swing right there? Seriously.
Well played.
I exhibited an enormous amount of restraint right there.
You did.
I want.
I'm very
props.
Surprised.
Yeah, well, I just woke up. Anyway,
I actually have a lot of awesome video game moments, but I think one of my favorite, I don't even know if I can narrow it down to a favorite.
I know.
There's just so many awesome things that happen in the course of video games. But my favorite moment, I'm going for the tugging at the heartstrings right here. If you remember, near the end of the game Super Metroid, the Metroid series has always been one of my favorites. It's hard as hell because it's a game where you go and you explore, and it's not, the answers aren't given to you. You have to go and explore and find things out for yourself, and there's a lot of story in it that is kind of hidden, kind of very subtle. Super Metroid is actually the third game in the series. The first one was the original Metroid for the original Nintendo. Anybody who's ever played it will say, "Damn you, Mother Brain." And it had a lesser-known sequel for the Game Boy called Metroid 2. It was actually a lot bigger game than the Nintendo one, and a lot harder, too. A lot of people didn't like it. We went to the Metroid home world and exterminated them. And at the end, you fought the Metroid Queen and killed her. But before you escaped, you found the last living Metroid egg, which hatched. And the little Metroid hatchling came and floated around you and thought you were its mother. And it's really cute, and it helped you escape by eating all the metal bars between you and your ship. And the focus of Super Metroid was getting that baby Metroid hatchling back, because at the end of that game, you take it to the Earth Science Lab, and they perform experiments on it and get DNA samples and keep it in a cage, and it gets stolen by the space pirates, and you go and get it back. Anyway,
space pirates are such jerks.
Anyway, there's a little too much exposition for this, but thank you, Dana. you spend the game searching for the baby Metroid, and you eventually find it. It's huge. It's been starved to death. It had to forage for its own food, and it initially attacks you. But before it kills you, it recognizes you and lets you keep going. And when you're in that final battle with Mother Brain, it saves you and sacrifices its own life for you. A really, really touching moment that doesn't really get repeated very often, or as well as it was in this game. And that is my favorite moment. Dana, what is yours?
It is so hard to narrow things down for me. I grew up on the original NES, and I got one, I want to say when I was 8 or 9. It's hard for me to remember. But anyway, oh, jeez. There are so many games that I really, really deeply attach to. One of them is Shadowgate, which I mentioned last episode. The other, my big thing is I am a Final Fantasy junkie. I have a Xanarkin tattoo on my shoulder, so, you know, my nerd credentials cannot be called into question.
That is an awesome tattoo, by the way. It's
I gotta get it
awesome.
Refilled in, though, because I was picking at it while it was healing. I have, like, two memories of the original Nintendo that kind of stick with me. The first one was when I got the very first Final Fantasy, because I had a subscription to Nintendo Power at the time, like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while there, well, the magazine was bi-monthly when it started out, and then they started going monthly with specials for certain games. They started out with Super Mario Brothers 3, and then they just kept... They did four of them. They did, like, Mario 3, Ninja Gaiden, something else, and then the first Final Fantasy. And that was the advent of the strategy guide.
Mm-hmm.
So Nintendo Power did it first, and let me tell you, it was a godsend, because nothing but maps. And boy, was that, you know, where all the treasures are, and I'm like, okay, good, so I can skip it. But I think that... My favorite memory was I got the original Final Fantasy for Christmas of 1990, I want to say. You might want to correct me on that. I know it was the year it came out, so I want to say it was 90. By January 30th of 1991, I beat the game. And I was so and right there, I think that I pinpointed the moment when Final Fantasy, in general, sunk its hooks into my poor childish flesh, and, you know, almost two decades later, they haven't let go. And so I'm,
boy, have they,
you know,
not
I got
let go.
Square Enix in my blood, man.
That's because your tattoo kind of bled a little bit when
I took the bandage off. I have a picture of this somewhere. I have the Xanarkin shape, like, in my blood, and I thought, wow, I really do bleed Final Fantasy.
You're
cool.
Correct. It was released. The original Final Fantasy was released in North America in 1990.
Yep. Okay. So I was right. I'm really bad with dates predating 1995. So.
Mm-hmm.
But the other memory that I have is just. It was a big family thing because it was just me and my sister and my dad living together and around then. And so we all kind of gathered around the Nintendo and we all played games together. It was really, you know, it was a lot of fun. My dad and I used to play Contra and Life Force.
Contra.
And to this day, I still kind of kick ass at it. It's really neat. And
I have many a fond memory of Contra.
You know, and that's the sucky part about... I have them on emulators now because I lack an actual 8-bit Nintendo. But I can't get 2-player to work on it. And it's the dumbest thing because I really miss playing Contra on a console with somebody.
We'll have to see if we can fix that sometime before you leave.
Oh, man. Forget it, man. If you can find, you know, an 8-bit Nintendo and a cartridge and 2 controllers, more power to you.
You can probably start at pawn shops or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's give me money first.
Money is good.
All right. Well, hey, you know, this is supposed to be a superhero super special, and we're already 20 minutes in, and we don't have very much superhero stuff, so let's fix that. Dana, what do we have tonight?
Dark Knight reviews. We've got a few of those. We asked listeners for content, and God bless them, they came through for us.
Excellent.
I still have that email open from Raz and Beat Boy, who went into Dark Knight stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And let me go ahead and skim that through.
What'd they say?
Let's see, skip. Heath Ledger, blah blah blah. Ledger really makes. Oh, by the way. I'm going to tell a warning right now. If you haven't seen The Dark Knight yet, what the hell is wrong with you? Get out to a theater.
Stop
and number
this.
Two,
yeah, stop this show because we're going to continue on about it. There are
major spoilers.
Don't listen to it until you've seen it, unless you don't mind spoilers. Okay?
We are
for serious.
We're not going to hold back. Anyway, continue.
Okay. Spoiler warning. 3, 2, 1. Okay, here we go. Ledger really makes the Joker his own character. If you're a comic book purist, you may not like it so much because the Joker in this film is not the flamboyant camp psychopath of the comic books, but a much darker personality. I like it because I think it fits the tone of the film perfectly. He's a perfect counterpart to Christian Bale's frightening and mythic Batman,
completely.
And I would be surprised if we ever see a take on the Joker that is unique and well-developed as this one is.
I hate to say it, but not even Mark Hamill really got the concept of the character as well as Heath Ledger did. I mean, Mark Hamill voiced the Joker in the 90s animated series and further on into the Joker special of Batman Beyond.
Okay, well,
and
he also did some
of the episodes of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, unless I'm mistaken, and I don't think I am.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but they still got more in this letter. If I were to pick anything at all as a negative thing, I would maybe question the decision to make Gotham look like a normal metropolis rather than the gothic set piece it usually is. I'm still undecided as to how I feel about this. On one hand, it helps ground the film in reality a bit more, and thus makes the Joker's excesses look even more horrific, and Batman more of a myth than a man. On the other hand, it takes some getting used to.
I have one thing to say to that.
It was Chicago!
No.
It was awesome!
Not that.
What?
Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, hi.
The giant nipple statues of Gotham.
Yeah, don't say the J word. Come on, man. anyway,
frickin'
Schumacher. Hold on, I'm almost on here. I really encourage everyone to go see it if they haven't already, though. Dark Knight has really raised the bar on superhero adaptations, and between this and Iron Man, it's a good time to be a superhero fan going to the movies.
Seriously.
Also, if you guys could do me a favor and plug our podcast as well, that would be swell. It's called Invasion of the Pod People, and we discuss similarly geeky activities, though generally from a more queer perspective. We can be listened to at myspace.com/thepodpeople, all one word. And we also have a fan club on Facebook for anyone interested in joining. Thanks for your time, Raz. P.S. Made a Fail is the best name ever. Told you so, Kevin.
Thank you. Well, it's too bad we're not going to be plugging their podcast. So, oh well. we love you guys. Thank you so much for the review.
Yeah, you have to pay for advertising on this show.
No, thank you so much for the review. It was
But they don't have any money. How are they going to pay for the advertising?
Yes, thank you, Logical Fallacy Girl.
No, that was with the... Never mind, Adam.
I got it. Actually,
anyway.
In terms of the Joker, expanding on that, I subscribe to the Live Journal of Cleolinda Jones, who also writes Movies in 15 Minutes. She excellent writer, very funny, keeps me up to date on a lot of movie news. She was talking about the Joker in The Dark Knight, and it... Let me see if I can find it here. The thing about the Joker is, you know, Batman has a lot of there's a lot of villains in his rogue gallery, and a lot of them have really interesting backstories and a lot of really in-depth, really detailed, and a lot of them intertwine with Batman himself. And the Joker. The thing about the Joker is that he needs no backstory. He's the Joker. He's what Cleolinda says. He's not a person. He's a force. He doesn't have an origin, an end, or a beginning. He showed up in Gotham one day and turned it upside down until he was done, and then we didn't see him anymore. But he'll never go away.
You know what? That was fantastic how they handled that in the movie.
Mm-hmm. It's she's right. Honestly, he's not a... Well, obviously, he is a person, but he doesn't need backstory. He doesn't need an explanation. He just is. He's the Joker. Whenever anybody thinks of the number one arch-nemesis of Batman, the Joker always pops up as number one. He's got so many villains, so many great villains that all deserve mention, but the Joker... is by far the one that everybody loves the best.
Part of the reason why is because he is a force of chaos, and therefore he doesn't have any sort of, like, you know, origin. He doesn't have humanity in him, so they can't really make him a sympathetic character. And because he's more meant to be just sort of an opposing force to Batman's order, the Joker is and always will be chaos. and you can't really personify chaos without losing some of its very nature.
And Tim Burton tried. He tried to give the Joker the backstory, and I think he did pretty well, but it kind of took the backseat to the Joker actually being the Joker in, you know, the Michael Keaton movie.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody's loving Heath Ledger's performance as the Joker, which is very well deserved, because I forgot I was watching an actor while I was seeing the movie. I was watching the frickin' Joker.
In that same post that Clea Linda said, she said right here, "I am beyond trying to put a value judgment on Heath Ledger's performance. I really don't know that it's possible at this point. The Joker just is. It's hard to remember that there's an actor in there, and that somebody actually sat down and wrote those lines for Ledger to recite, and that the Joker didn't just show up on set one day. You know, as moviegoers, we don't get to see the times where Heath Ledger had fun and joked around on set and talked about his daughter or music or skateboarding or whatever, and then went home and started filming another movie and moved on with his life or what time he had left. All we have is this movie, and as far as we can tell, or at least it's tempting to think, that one man walked into the makeup trailer and another walked out, and that the first one was never seen again. That's not what happened, as Christian Bale points out in some interview or another. To think of it that way comes from a lack of understanding on how acting really works. But it's really tempting to think."
Yeah.
Clea Linda, excellent person. I'll link you to her live journal after
this. The problem with going crazy over Heath Ledger's performance is that a lot of people think that that means that we're disparaging the other actors who have portrayed the Joker, and that's not the case at all, because I have the utmost respect for Cesar Romero, Jack Nicholson, Mark Hamill as well. The thing with the Joker is that he's so open to interpretation and he has so many facets. Mm-hmm. I think that the Joker was portrayed perfectly by each actor
for the aspect
of the Joker that they were going for.
For the kind of medium that they used, for the 60s Adam West Batman that was campy fun, Cesar Romero did a wonderful job with the campy fun Joker. With the 90s cartoon with Mark Hamill, he did an excellent job as the voice actor of just shifting between malevolence and complete insanity. Jack Nicholson did an absolutely outstanding performance in the dark yet fun-loving take that Tim Burton had in his movie. And the Christopher Nolan adaptation of the Batman series is darker, it's grittier, it's a lot more real, it's a lot more personal, and Heath Ledger just completely nailed it.
It makes no sense for all the fanboys to be all like, "Well, who is the best Joker?"
They were all the best for what they did it for.
Precisely.
Well, just to be honest, saying fanboys shouldn't argue is like saying that gravity shouldn't work. It's always
it's like
going
saying
to
the Joker shouldn't blow up Gotham. It's just it's a force of nature. It's going to it's always going to be there. But we've got a disclaimer there. We're not saying that there is a best. We're not saying that.
We're not playing favorites.
No,
because they're all our favorites.
We're just saying that this particular one was phenomenal, and we're raving about this one.
And I think even the fanboys who are picking one over the other can at least agree that there were merits to all the other Jokers.
Exactly.
Fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly, cowboys gotta have to cry, cry, cry.
And my father was actually talking about this before. He's of the Cesar Romero camp. He says that nobody beyond that.
No pun intended.
Mm-hmm. He says that nobody else portrayed the Joker as well as Cesar Romero did, but the point remains. That's what my dad grew up with. That's what he knows. That's what he thinks is going to be the best. I grew up with the Mark Hamill version, and I'm very hard pressed to say that Heath Ledger did a better job than Mark Hamill did. But I think for the medium that it was, Mark Hamill would have had a difficult time in that kind of a performance.
Exactly. They all suited their respective environments perfectly. And there's so many facets to the character of the Joker. Well, of course it's going to take stellar performances by four different actors to even begin to cover everything that is the Joker.
Dana?
Yo.
Nurse outfit. That's all I'm going to say. That was amazing. Oh my god. It was unexpected, and it was completely... It was perfect.
How tempted were you to sit there and say something in a Wacko Warner voice?
I was tempted to say
I did that
goodbye,
in my head
nurse.
In the theater.
Called it.
And then, of course, the pencil trick. Oh, that was wonderful. That was
pure
Joker
right there. I was married to this movie as soon as I saw them flip the semi. I loved the fact that they didn't go overboard with CGI.
They didn't go overboard with the CGI.
It wouldn't have fit it. They went with stuntmen and explosions. And, you know, it was perfect for what they were trying to accomplish, which is a more realistically grounded Batman.
And what I love is that... Going back to the Heath Ledger performance, he's a funny man. He's funny while being completely terrifying at the same time, but he's funny and he plays it so straight. And that also is just absolutely phenomenal. He's not going like, oh, waka waka waka, look at how crazy I am. He's playing it straight.
Well, that's the Cesar Romero camp.
Yeah, that's the Cesar Romero camp. And, to a certain extent, also the Mark Hamill version. But,
Well, Mark Hamill is a cartoon, and you can get away with a lot more in
cartoons. That's why I say Mark Hamill did a phenomenal job of being the voice of the cartoon Joker. He would have had trouble with this performance. Heath Ledger completely nailed it.
Right. Well,
I keep being afraid of interrupting someone because that's just horribly, horribly rude.
We interrupt each other all the time. Just go with it.
Yeah, haven't you heard the show?
Point. But one of my favorite moments of The Dark Knight is when he's blowing up the hospital, when there's just the one explosion and it's not
And he
really
turns
impressive.
Back and he's like, what?
He actually looks at the detonator. He thumps it a couple times and he's waving it and then it blows up and he just kind of does the... exaggerated innocent walk away, and that just
no. He shrugs like, oh, okay.
Little things like that just really, I really enjoyed it.
That got the audience laughing so hard. Every Joker moment got the audience laughing so hard, and I only saw it a couple days ago, honestly, and it was only a half full theater. And
are you lucky? I had to get my tickets like 3 hours ahead of time.
Well, I did that on purpose so that I could, you know, actually just walk up and buy tickets and then go into the movie, you know, like 5 minutes before it started, and not have to deal with lines and crowds and stuff. But I wanted to make sure that I saw it before this episode because, I mean, how am I going to review The Dark Knight without having seen it?
Gosh, you'll just have to let Dana talk the whole time. I know that's really hard to do.
But even with a half full theater, the energy, what I love about seeing movies opening weekend or close enough to opening weekend that it's still a relatively full theater, if you've got a good audience, is the atmosphere while you're watching the movie. You got people cheering the awesome parts. You've got people laughing at the funny parts. You feel like a part of the action, and I felt like I was part of that movie right there the entire time, and it was just an amazing experience. And anybody who's listening will probably agree with me here. It just made it so much better.
You know, I think we're going off way too much on Heath Ledger, and we're neglecting Aaron Eckhart's performance as Harvey Dent and Two-Face, because what is amazing is that normally when you've got more than one villain in a Batman movie, somebody ends up getting short shrift. Mm-hmm. May I point out that horror show that was Batman and Robin, which today is
the only movie
I've ever walked out of.
Yeah.
And there's no time to really develop the characters.
There could have been a lot more with Arnold Schwarzenegger. There really could have been a lot more of that and a lot less
Kevin?
Yes.
You speak blasphemy, and the day that they invent a button that will punch somebody over the internet, I will hook it up to your computer.
Well, the thing is, I mean, they Bane
no,
was an
Batman
afterthought.
No, Batman and Robin didn't exist. We're not talking
they
about
They just
it.
Basically
okay. All right,
threw
sorry.
Bane in there just for giggles.
All right, I'm sorry. Let's not talk about the movie that... It's like Highlander 2 or Star Trek 5. It did
but
not exist.
The thing
exist.
That I really... the thing that I really loved
episodes
about
1 through 3.
What I really loved about Dark Knight is that it wasn't all about the Joker, even though he stole a great number of scenes, but
it was also
the time
about
and the
Harvey
effort
Dent
that
the
they put into
as well.
The character of Harvey Dent and just his tragic fall, basically, because he was the White Knight of Gotham.
Seriously.
And I think he was fantastically portrayed, because a lot of people forget that Two-Face isn't just some, you know, run-of-the-mill villain. He's a very tragic character. He started out as a good guy, and he was just constantly, over the course of the film, broken, and you can see how it gradually happens. They do the obligatory face half in shadow part where he starts to really have his breakdown, where he's threatening that one villain.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the final straw just came when, you know, he loses half of his face and the Joker starts screwing with him in the hospital. And that's really where it all just sort of fell apart for Harvey. And you really feel for him. I mean, you know, this was a guy who believed in justice, who believed what he was saying. He wasn't just all rhetoric. He was an actual good guy. Unfortunately, he's also human and fallible. And, you know, the Joker, unfortunately, you know, won that battle and brought out Harvey's dark side. And it was just so sad.
It was. And knowing what was going to happen to Harvey Dent just made it so hurt so much more to watch, is because you were rooting for him. You for a moment there, you honestly could believe that that wasn't going to happen, that Harvey Dent was going to save Gotham. You for a moment there, you had your hopes brought up, even though you knew differently, and then having it the rug pulled out from under you yet again, even though you were expecting it, it just made it hurt. It just made it so much more poignant. It really did.
And you know what? I think that's why it worked with the two-villain thing, this movie, because since the Joker's a force of chaos, we needed somebody who was rooted in humanity, and that was definitely Harvey.
What I love about the character of Two-Face in any of his iterations is how he still considers Bruce Wayne a friend, even as a villain.
Yeah, there's still some Harvey left in him.
There's still Harvey left in him, and
But it's a Harvey who's given up.
Yeah, and that's what's
and that's why
so
it's
horrible.
So sad.
Yeah,
and I think that Christopher Nolan deserves the highest possible praise.
This is better be
for...
up for a lot of Oscars next year.
Yeah, for making all his characters. I mean, even Batman had choices to face. I think if you want to sum up The Dark Knight, it's going to be about personal choices, facing the light, facing the dark. You know, what is it that one man can take, and what, you know, when you have to make the choice to choose between the light and the dark.
There's a quote from first movie from the animated series, Mask of the Phantasm, which was an excellent movie. Check it out if you haven't seen it yet. That I think just really applies to The Dark Knight. It was Alfred talking to Bruce when he's near the end of the movie, when he's heartbroken and, you know, just completely devastated, and saying, you know, Alfred saying that he watches Bruce go out and walk the edge of that abyss every night. And you don't know what true darkness is until you're right up at that line and choose to walk away. You're up at that line and you don't step over it.
You can use that as an allegory for Faith from Buffy, or when she was actually an angel, that episode, Sanctuary, when Angel was telling Faith, you know, are you going to walk out into that darkness? You can choose the darkness, Faith, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's really just, and everything comes back to Joss Whedon with us, doesn't it? We're gonna have to
eventually, yes.
We're going to have to rename the show "Made of Restraining Order" at some point.
I've got one more. I know we're totally like just masturbating over Dark Knight, but I've got one more review. From a listener named Derek Ferguson, and I'm going to try to read this one just all the way through really fast, and then we can move on to other things finally. Okay.
Yeah, this is a superhero super special. We got more than just Batman here.
We promise. Okay. All right, here's Derek's review. Something really special happened to me while watching The Dark Knight. sometime around the part where the Joker and Harvey Dent are having a very revealing conversation in Gotham General Hospital, I realized that I wasn't just watching a good superhero movie. I was watching a good movie, period. The summer of 2008 has been a very good summer for superheroes in general. Adam, be good. And along with several other comic book movies, The Dark Knight has successfully straddled the worlds of the comic book fan and the average moviegoer. Movies based on comic book superheroes have made it into the mainstream, and in the case of The Dark Knight, it's well-deserved. But comic book fans such as me have been saying for years that if only the studios would take these characters seriously and trust their stories to writers, directors, actors, and technical people who would simply treat the material with respect, these characters and their stories would deliver. In this case, it pays off in many excellent ways. That's not to say that The Dark Knight rang all my bells, but we'll get to that later. And I had to expurgate some stuff because it's just plot and we already all know it. What really made The Dark Knight a standout for me is the ethical and moral issues raised by and faced by the main characters. Batman, Jim Gordon, and Harvey Dent are all good and honorable men committed to their dream of a Gotham City free of the terrible decay of crime eating away at it, and they're willing to go to war for it. But the Joker escalates the war to a frightening new level, and he keeps upping it. Each one of the three men must look inside themselves and determine how they're going to save the city without losing the elements of their character that separate them from the criminals that they fight. Rachel Dawes loves Bruce Wayne, but she wonders if Gotham needs him to be Batman more than she needs him to be a husband. Even Alfred and Wayne Enterprises CEO Lucius Fox have their own ethical issues to wrestle with in this movie, especially Lucius when he discovers how Batman is using an invention of his in a way Lucius never intended for it to be used, and is plainly frightened at the thought of Batman having such power. Oh man, he's got like four more paragraphs here.
Let me touch upon that for a second. Going back, and I'm going to probably for the rest of the whole Batman part of this special, I'm probably going to keep referring back to Clelinda's post. This is all compiled in one LiveJournal post that she made, and I'll link this to all of you guys in the show notes. She says, the part about Batman blithely violating everyone's civil liberties with the cell phone scanner didn't bother me, and you know why? Maybe Nolan was assuming too much of the audience, but I felt like we were supposed to react with dismay. We assumed we would in the current political climate, where even Republican candidates don't want anything to do with Bush. And he didn't want to oversell it. He would simply show Batman doing it, have Morgan Freeman object, and the rest of us would go, oh, Batman, no. Although, strangely, I did not get that feeling about Batman going to Hong Kong and simply kidnapping that guy, which was against international law and possibly even worse. But the whole thing about Batman using the whole cell phone scanner, honestly, really didn't feel to me, and this is me personally, really did not feel to me as such the horrible thing that it was obviously meant to be, because it was more like a, hey, let's finally just catch the Joker, let's get it done with. And I was like, okay, well, so he can turn the cell phones into radar, let's move on. So I think it kind of went a little bit too over the top at that point that we kind of just felt it was a little bit much. But that, okay. That's just me.
Can I read the rest of Derek's letter? I while you were talking, I was expurgating, you know, as much as I possibly could because it's really long. So sorry, Derek, but I'm going to still try to touch on your main point. So here we go. Mm-hmm. What else did I like about The Dark Knight? I like how Batman is actually shown doing detective work. I like all the cool bat gadgets. I like Christian Bale a lot. He seems more confident in this movie and is equally at home as Bruce Wayne and Batman. I like that this movie was filmed in Chicago, which does an excellent job of playing Gotham City.
As a Chicago resident, I thank you.
Mm-hmm. Having the action take place in a real city and not on a set gives this version of Gotham City a bedrock reality that the Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher films didn't have. What didn't I like about The Dark Knight? Christian Bale still hasn't found a voice that works for Batman. His Batman continues to sound like a throat cancer victim straining to talk, and I think we can all agree on that.
I had trouble understanding him, honestly. I know. The bat voice, and I understand the point about making the bat voice sound different than the Bruce Wayne voice, because that's the problem. The whole problem with what was the Michael Keaton voice, it didn't really change all that much.
Yeah, but God, he sounded like me a couple weeks ago.
It sounded like he was about to, like he was about to have a tracheotomy or something.
Anyway, I missed Katie Holmes as Rachel Dawes, but considering the character's eventual fate, I was glad she wasn't in this one. I was confused by some of the fight scenes. Christopher Nolan tends to film them too close in and underlit, so that I honestly had a hard time telling what was going on. I think the gimmick of Batman's cape being a glider is used way too often, and the Joker could have been cleaned up a little. He looked downright diseased and infected throughout most of the movie. All right, last paragraph. I only hope that with all the deserved praise given to Heath Ledger, that Aaron Eckhart isn't forgotten, as I believe that his performance is equally as good as Harvey Dent's character, and his story is really at what the core of The Dark Knight. And Eckhart is terrific in the role.
We'll agree with
but
you
there really isn't a bad performance or misstep in the entire movie. The Dark Knight is essentially a hardcore action thriller that sets out to show Batman in the real world just as much as possible. And it works. By all means, don't wait for the DVD. Go see it in the theaters. It is simply the best Batman movie made so far.
See
Derek, we agree with a lot of that, and thank you so much for writing in and sharing
thank you.
Very well-written thoughts. I'm sorry I had to cut some of it, but it was pretty long, and a lot of it is stuff that we just touched on earlier anyway.
Incidentally, this is going to be my last point. Did you notice that squirrely guy at Wayne Enterprises that tried to blackmail him was kind of looked a bit like Joss Whedon?
No, I didn't.
I kind of saw
that. Would have been funny, though. Maybe it was Joss Whedon actually trying to take down Bruce Wayne Enterprises.
No, but it kind of looked like him. Just a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you what, since we do have to at some point move slightly away from Batman and get into the Why Stuff is Awesome segment, I think Kevin has a wonderful segue for us.
Well, I am the terror that flaps in the night, after all. I am the peanut butter that sticks to the roof of the mouth of the underworld. And I am, unfortunately, not Darkwing Duck, but I'm a huge fan of the show. I used to watch it all the time when I got home from school. It was one of the best spin-offs of a Disney cartoon show ever. It was starring characters from DuckTales. It ran from, 1991 to 1995. It honestly didn't get the respect that it deserved. Darkwing
Duck.
That's
actually a part of the Darkwing character. I mean, he's always doing these really heroic things, and he never gets any credit.
Mm-hmm. Well, Darkwing Duck was spun off of DuckTales, and it was inspired by two specific episodes of DuckTales titled Double O Duck and The Masked Mallard. The original concept had Launchpad McQuack as the star. Launchpad actually, though he's not the star, he's a supporting character in that, but he's a carryover from DuckTales. One of Drake Mallard's best friends, Drake Mallard being, of course, Darkwing Duck, of course. And the thing about Darkwing Duck is that not only does it parody all sorts of different superheroes. At one point, there's Darkwing Duck has a fake origin story similar to Batman, and another one where there is a similar one to Spider-Man. But not only do they parody it, but they pay such awesome tribute to the superhero genre and the film noir genre, and keep it a Saturday morning cartoon that people of all ages, including really young children, can enjoy. So I'm just a fan. What did you like about it, Adam?
I just love that. Well, first off, I love that that lasted so long, because let's face it, Disney is not the best friend of cartoons ever outside of the
feature-length film part of it, but
yeah, but in the '90s, it had they made some really good decisions, like keeping Gargoyles for a second season, even though they screwed it over in the third season. But they didn't have to keep it for a second one; they did, and that was the best one.
Yeah, Darkwing was from the period of before every cartoon ever made turned to crap. Otherwise known as when I was actually watching cartoons. Because every modern cartoon just seems... It lacks something. That something being quality, it seems like. Well, there
now,
are some good
wait,
ones.
Don't go disparaging the 2002 Masters of the Universe cartoon.
There are exceptions to the rule. There's the Masters of the Universe cartoon 2002. There's the relaunch of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles relatively recently. That's actually produced by 4Kids Entertainment.
But
that
to
was
be fair,
really,
I don't
really
think there's anything
to,
original out there that's very good.
Avatar.
You know, correct us if we're wrong.
Nickelodeon cartoon series Avatar: The Last Airbender. Critically
Avatar
acclaimed.
Is the exception that proves the rule, because Avatar is really original and I really love it. But it seems like it used to be a high. This may be part of the nostalgia factor, and maybe misremembering. But it seems like a whole lot of the cartoons I grew up with were just better. They were just better produced.
Not that you're biased in any way at all. No.
Oh,
no.
I am hella biased.
All right. So anyway, now that we finally got Adam to talk, I think we can just move on to other things.
Sam, what? Now I know that I shouldn't be.
It's our show. Stop it. let's just try to wrap this up with our round table of random stuff. So who wants to contribute first with any kind of news stories, superhero-related nonsense?
I will.
All right. Knock our socks off.
All right. Atomic Robo is not a new series, but it's just going into its second volume from Red 5 Comics. They're a new company. They have, like, three other titles. And what I love about this is it's just such, it's original, but it's not like, oh my god, it's never been done in the history of Sentinel of Thought ever. It's about, well, the title says everything. It's about a atomic robot built by Nikola Tesla in the 20s. And basically it follows It's not a period piece. It has aspects of, it's draws a lot from the pulp, from pulp comics. It's like it follows perspective of someone who's been alive since the 20s.
Oh,
in his
okay.
Unique perspective.
So it's set in modern or relatively modern times. Okay, I was a little bit confused on that part.
It's really hard to describe. Actually, you just need to sit down and read it because it's just so awesome. At one point, a Robo and his team from Tesla 9 take on a moving tank the size of a pyramid that uses solar-powered death rays.
Okay, that's pretty badass right there.
Well, at least the villains are going green.
That's actually brought up. One of the members of his team did his thesis on a death ray based on solar technology because nuclear weapons are so destructive to the environment. He figured that might be a good money in a economically or a environmentally sound alternative.
That is,
and Robo actually says that's
destructive to the environment.
Green super weapons coming soon to a Walmart near you.
Oh, well, you're only going to need a hunting license and to be at minimum 12 years old to purchase one.
All right,
and I have to say, I would buy a super laser.
I got news. I got a ton of news. So I don't know how much you've got, Kevin, but I'll try to take turns.
No, you go ahead. Get all your stuff out of the way. I wanted to do this whole big thing on Dr. Horrible when you're done. But so go ahead.
All right. Well, let me do a couple, and then we'll move on to Dr. Horrible, and then get to my last three. Okay. There is DC's been doing a lot of animated movies lately. You know, Batman, the Gotham. What is the title of that?
Gotham Knight.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the set in between Batman Begins and Dark Knight. And again, we come back to the goddamn Batman. But
thank you, Frank
everywhere
Miller.
Everywhere this month.
The latest thing that DC is doing is they are finally doing an animated Wonder Woman movie.
I saw that. That looked absolutely phenomenal.
Kevin, you are going to love some of the voice cast.
What's some of the voice cast?
Well, we don't have a voice for Wonder Woman yet, but the two that are confirmed, Alfred Molina, who played Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2, is going to be voicing Ares, God of War.
Nice.
And Steve Trevor is going to be played by, can you give me a drum roll?
There will be one edited in.
Edited in. Nathan
or maybe not.
Fillion.
Holy crap.
I thought you'd like that.
That is like perfect casting, seriously.
My favorite part is that Gail Simone is writing it.
Ooh.
So, yeah, that gives me a huge fangirl happy. We don't have a plot quite yet, but all we know is that it's supposed to be very, very action heavy, and I'm going to link to the trailer.
Excellent.
Another movie that is going to be coming out hopefully at the end of the year over in the Marvel side of things. It's called True Believer, and it is a feature-length documentary on the life and creations of Stan Lee. It's according to IMDb, it's currently in post. There's no release date yet, but they're thinking maybe the end of the year. There's a ton of people there, a lot of, you know, friends and family of Marvel, and inexplicably, Paris Hilton?
What?
I know. To IMDb. I know! What the
Can
hell?
Can this woman not ruin anything that I love?
I don't know.
What?
Go to IMDb right now. She's there. I'm not kidding.
I'm not going to IMDb
Paris
if Paris Hilton
freaking
is there.
Paris Hilton. In a documentary about Stan Lee.
Maybe she needs to be in the Invisible Woman, and they'll just paint her out.
Maybe if we ignore it, she'll just go away.
For her.
Anyway, I'm gonna link to the. I know. I'm gonna link to IMDb in the show notes. So go ahead, Kevin, your turn. Since I mentioned Nathan Fillion, let's go ahead and hear what you have to say about Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, which I finally saw and loved.
Finally saw and loved. Dr. Horrible has been out for a few weeks now. It's been an instant phenomenon. It's been advertised so many different places. There are interviews and all sorts of magazines, everything. It was up for 5 days... 6 days for free. It was one episode every 2 days, and then it was taken down for free and put up to purchase.
I saw it on MySpace the other day being advertised. So, yeah.
Well, it's got a MySpace page, but yeah. for fans of Joss Whedon who have missed the Dr. Horrible phenomenon and are not quite sure they want to pay the $4 to get the. Three episodes just yet off of iTunes, which, by the way,
I bought it.
If you were that
completely reasonable,
not to buy it.
$4 for 45 minutes of pure awesome.
I've been getting crap from our random Minnesota listener for all the downloading I do, but I bought it this time. Okay.
There we go. But if you want to try it out before purchasing it, it is back up for free on drhorrible.com through Hulu in a one feature length. Video, 45 minutes long. There are commercials, but that's completely, you know, understandable for that. But there are still links to iTunes to go purchase the whole phenomenon. Eventually, will be released to a DVD with. And
are they saying when?
I'm sorry.
Are they saying when? Because I'm totally in line for that.
I haven't seen a release date for the DVD yet, but I will be one of the first people to get that as well. But here's the thing. The DVD will have a commentary by creators Joss Whedon and company, and that itself will be a musical.
Are you
the
kidding
commentary
me?
Is that is
the commentary is also a musical. Now, the thing about Dr. Horrible is that a lot of people have said this.
I'm floored by the awesome.
Yes, Joss Whedon, completely awesome. But the thing about Dr. Horrible, a lot of people have been very quick to say that it's not an original concept, but it doesn't really need to be an original concept because it's
Joss Whedon. Is anything these days?
Nothing's
Come
an
on.
Original concept this day, but the way Joss Whedon pulls it off, you've got the lovable... supervillain Dr. Horrible, played by Neil Patrick Harris. He completely a nerd, completely real. He's somebody who's one of us, which is why you root for him, even though
one
you know
of
he's
us.
The
one of us.
Even though you know he's the villain, and he's trying to woo the girl of his dreams, Penny from the laundromat, and is thwarted at every turn, not only in being a superhero, but also trying to get Penny by Captain Hammer, the local superhero. I think this is set in Los Angeles, so this is a Los Angeles local superhero, Captain Hammer, played by Nathan Fillion. And what I love about this is that it's very modern, but it's also very Silver Age with the weapons and the heroes and the names of all the villains. You got Bad Horse, you've got fake Thomas Jefferson, you've got
Bad Horse,
the thoroughbred of sin.
And
I can play it
for you guys if you want.
No, it's a lot more fun when we just burst into song randomly. I encourage that at every opportunity.
Well, which is
works
why
for Joss Whedon, why wouldn't it work for us?
Of course, the whole series
it's getting
is
getting eerie. What's this cheery singing all about?
All about.
Anyway, and it's completely Joss Whedon all the way with all the characters and all the produced by his friends and family. You'll see David Greenwalt and Marty Noxon in it. At some point, his brother and his either wife or fiance are minor characters in it at a couple points. What I love is just the whole theme of because Joss Whedon's not one for, you know, hey, everybody saved the day, everybody's happy now. You gotta hit him where it hurts with him, and he knows how to do that. And,
Penny dying was pretty much the gut shake of the whole month for me.
But here's the thing. Dr. Horrible, the thing about him, he doesn't kill people. He's a supervillain, but he has ethics. He has morals. He does not cross that line. He very specifically says that he doesn't cross that line. And when it's down to killing somebody to join the Evil League of Evil... he's not entirely certain if he wants to do that, but he it takes, you know, one push from Captain Hammer for him to decide, you know what, screw it, let's kill somebody, and I know who I'm killing. But even though it's not his thing to kill somebody, and he still hesitates, you see him hesitate to pull the trigger on Captain Hammer, even though he has him frozen in time, and he has the death ray right pressed up against his face, he hesitates.
And then Captain Hammer decides he needs to illustrate the jerk syndrome.
Of course, you know, Captain Hammer, you know, the jerk superhero. But what finally kills whatever good is in Billy, Dr. Horrible, is when his own invention, this whole episode is a spoiler alert. Okay, if they didn't want to see, they would have listened. But through no intention of his own, one of his own inventions kills the one person he loved the most. And
I didn't like the ending.
You saw it, because that's completely Joss Whedon as well. And you
I
see,
know, and that's
and
why it was so...
You were rooting for him. You wanted him to join the Evil League of Evil without killing somebody and getting Penny, who is completely not evil, even though it wouldn't have worked realistically in the first place.
I didn't like it because Penny just
wig out and become a supervillain like Harley Quinn or something.
And you see that even though he gets everything that he always wanted to be in the Evil League of Evil, and when he finally gets it, it costs him so much that you see that he really doesn't want to do this after all. When he goes and robs a bank, his heart's not in it. He switches to a red coat, which is probably symbolic of something or other. And
blood on him. I took one film class. I know that much.
And that final lyric of the closing song, where he just looks dead at the camera, and you see him completely shattered, completely destroyed. And that again is completely Joss Whedon.
But he should stop living the cliche that, you know, he just, you know, jossed Penny. I think I honestly don't have any better suggestions, but I don't think it fit
of the tone of the series.
Exactly.
It came completely out of nowhere. It went from
okay, there's goofy, fun songs. What the hell? She just got jossed. I'm sure that was what they were going for, mm-hmm. but it was very confusing. Like, I'm not really sure what the whole tone was supposed to be now, because now it's hard to watch and really enjoy all the goofy. And you know, it just
and
seemed
we
like
Joss
it was
Whedon.
Just...
We love Joss Whedon, but the fact that
it was really
the act
shoehorned
of doing something
there.
Like that, the act of doing something like that is already starting to be called doing a Joss Whedon. Should be a warning sign to him, and Joss, we love you. You make wonderful things. I'm a fan of everything you do. I'm very much looking forward to Dollhouse coming up in January. Check your local listings. Shameless plug, but
hope you got a big outlet. There's a massive
that
plug.
might be a warning sign for you to keep an eye out for. So you got
to
have some people end up happy.
In a future episode.
So, but anyway, I would love to see more of Dr. Horrible if this franchise continues to grow, or if it's just a one-shot thing, whatever it is, completely astounding.
I want more Bad Horse Chorus.
The Bad Horse Chorus.
And he's actually a horse!
And
he's a thoroughbred machine.
But that was so cool!
Yeah. Alright, and that...
And I want to see that evil Bowie guy. I thought that was hysterical.
Dead Bowie.
Dead Bowie, and it reminded me of my friend Jay. Big time.
Dead Bowie is one of the chairmen of the Evil League of Evil. There's a list somewhere. You go through the end credits, it lists all the members of the Evil League of Evil. So anyway, $4 for the whole thing, $1.99 for each individual episode if you want to get one individual episode for whatever reason. Still available online for free with commercials. Go check it out if you haven't already done so.
I got three more things to mention, but I want to see if Adam's got anything worthwhile to contribute other than falling off of his chair.
Love you too, Dana. Mostly, what I have is just geeky World of Warcraft things to mention, and we'll do that when you're not here so we don't have to offend you with our massive nerdage.
No, go right ahead. That's the whole point of the show, is it's not just me.
I thought the whole point of the show was it was just you and Kevin was just your sycophant.
Hey, I'm standing right here.
Oh, I have a sidekick. I thought I was the sidekick.
You're fired, Adam. You're completely fired.
Do I need to put in two? Do I at least get 2 weeks' notice?
You got 2 weeks to clear out all your crap before I set the dogs on you.
Are there gonna be dogs with bees in their mouths, and
when they bark, they shoot bees at you? Yes, it'll be those bees. Anyway, what do you have for us?
Go ahead, Adam. Shut up.
All right.
I'll get some pretzels.
Right. So, the next expansion for World of Warcraft has been announced to come out this year. It's called The Wrath of the Lich King for the five people who don't play the game in the continental United States. And I'm just really looking forward to this. It looks like it's going to be a giant leap forward in poking things with sticks until they die and give you stuff.
Of course.
And one of the things I'm really looking forward to is just all of the steampunk clockwork. Hey, let's give everyone a motorcycle and have dwarf and biker gangs.
They're not only adding steampunk element to all the design, the architecture, and everything in it, but they're also going back to the whole gothic medieval thing. There's going to be more Tim Burton inspired architecture, which you used to see with the Undercity and Naxxramas, because that's Nerubian architecture. Just the whole gothic medieval fantasy setting is coming back. We loved Burning Crusade. We loved all the space aliens and all the floaty crystals and stuff. But
I'm actually kind of burnt out on floating crystals. I have to say,
gotta go back to basics at some point, and that's what we're doing.
Girls in very little armor hitting big things with sticks.
If it exposes the femoral artery, it's not armor, okay? Plate mail bikini does not work in real life. Please don't insult us with that in the game. All right?
It's a game.
I understand.
We're still bitter about it.
My whole experience with World of Warcraft was A, getting ditched by various boyfriends in order for them to go play it, and B, me hitting the one key repeatedly until something died, and then I actually did go and wash my hand.
You washed your finger afterwards because it offended you so much.
I'm not an MMORPG girl. That's not my expertise.
Eh, that's fair enough.
That's what you guys are for. I mean, I think in some future episode, I think we need to discuss our geek credentials and, why we have the right to judge.
It's because it's my show. I have the right to judge because it's my show, okay?
Judge, jury, and snarky executioner.
Exactly. I am the law.
Well, I fought the law.
Yeah, but the law won.
Yeah, but...
Because the law cheats.
Yeah.
All right, you had anything else, Dana?
Yeah, I got a couple of things. Let me finish my pretzel here. Right. I turned on my mic a little bit too soon.
Nom, 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 pretzel, nom, nom.
No, I'm a professional. Okay.
I can pretzel.
Speaking of video games, we got... San Diego Comic-Con was just this last weekend, so I got a whole ton of stuff to go through. But I'll just stick with these two. Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2 Fusion will be coming out soon. I will link to the trailer. Confirmed characters are the Steve Rogers Captain America, Daredevil.
Yes.
All of the Fantastic Four. The Hulk, Iron Man, Luke Cage, Spider-Man, and The Thing. And I think where they're getting the word fusion from is that in the trailer towards the end, you can see the Invisible Woman and Iron Man sort of combining their powers. So, that could be something really interesting, and I'm really looking forward to seeing
Spider-Man and Johnny Storm maybe teaming up to do like an incendiary web attack. That would be awesome.
I actually played the first one with my brother, and he would play as Luke Cage, and I would play as Deadpool. And
little yellow boxes, what fun we'll have together!
Love Deadpool.
I loved his list during the pseudo advancing the story, because let's face it, Ultimate Alliance does not have much of a story. It's mostly just hey, go beat up
things.
We'll be over here. And basically, my brother would just about use Luke Cage's chain attack over and over.
Oh,
while spouting blaxploitation lines all the time.
Now, is he the same kind of guy?
And Dr. T. Mr. T.
Dr. T? You're fired.
Dr. T. He was bitten by a radioactive Mr. T during a routine foot extraction from someone.
when Mr. T was tired of their jibber jabber.
It's one of the lesser known episodes of the A Team where they had to physically extract him by hooking him up with the van and just driving him away.
Da 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 da.
Anyway, and I would play as Deadpool. He would play as. I'd play Deadpool. He'd play as Luke Cage, and basically, it was the weirdest team up ever.
I can imagine.
Sweet Christmas.
Oh.
Merch revenge.
I have
and
not.
Sweet Christmas was actually his ultimate combo attack. Basically, jump up in the air and do a people's elbow onto the ground, making a shockwave.
Nice. I did not play Deadpool Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Can you. Does Deadpool at any point refer to the fact that he's in a video game? Does he?
Yes.
Please? Does
he? Also hits on Valkyrie.
Oh, Kevin, are you going to be renting that one or what?
I am going to be renting this, yes. All right. Anyway, continue. Also,
at the end of the... They'll show stats at who killed what, and if you win, Deadpool says, "I won! I won!" And the crazy... Whoever did Deadpool's voice actor should do him in Ultimate Alliance 2, because he sounds like Wade Wilson should sound.
A complete Fruit Loop.
And you gotta love him.
That'd be neat if
he is nuttier than a fruitcake.
They have Deadpool. I'm not sure if they do, but wouldn't it be neat to sneak Cable in there, too? I mean, if you're going to fuse powers.
Oh, Cable fun.
Oh, that would be awesome if they had a Cable Deadpool team
up. The other video game that I don't think I even need to mention, but I'm going to anyway.
I know what's coming.
Mortal Kombat versus DC had its own panel at San Diego Comic-Con with
I wonder
Ed
what
Boon.
New stuff had been released from that, yeah.
That with could just Edmund be a point and click adventure game. Superman uses laser lobotomy on
Excuse me, sir. I am a lady, and you are interrupting me.
How dare you interrupt people, Adam? Seriously. What the hell?
For the love of Benji.
Because I'm going to address the point that you and the rest of the internet have been bringing up. Thank you very much. Anyway, Ed Boon and Jimmy Palmiotti from Midway and DC, respectively, were there representing. Ed Boon wanted to mention that this is Mortal Kombat 8 officially, and the whole Superman problem. Remember, Superman is vulnerable to magic.
And some of the people use magic. That's the whole point of it.
Everybody is using that. They're in a magical dimension, for crying out loud.
Johnny Cage doesn't use magic. Johnny Cage uses sunglasses.
Johnny Cage isn't in it.
Oh, well, that solves that problem rather handily, doesn't it?
To date, on the DC side, here is who we've got. Batman, Superman, Flash, Catwoman, and Shazam. On the Mortal Kombat side, Sub-Zero, Sonya, Shang Tsung, and Liu Kang. And then there were four more announced. Ed Boon says, on the MK side, in the black trunks, Jax, and one of my personal favorites, Kitana.
Ooh.
And then, to the extreme excitement of the fans in attendance over on the DC side, Hal Jordan Green Lantern.
Yes.
And the Joker.
Ooh.
The Joker.
They say that the DC heroes are not going to have fatalities, but they will deliver brutalities. However, all of the Mortal Kombat characters and all of the DC villains will have fatalities. So can you imagine what the Joker's going to do for fatalities?
That's his wording flower.
Well, he needs to have a crowbar.
Oh,
that was low.
Oh, well, no. You want to go low blow? Let's see if Wonder Woman has a fatality. See if she snaps anybody's neck.
Asshole. She gets a brutality.
Or maybe
she's not even in it confirmed yet. What I'm wondering about is, got DC villains, where's Catwoman gonna go? Is she gonna be hero? Because she's wearing her heroic costume, only forgot to zip it up. And,
When has Selina Kyle ever learned how to work a zipper?
Her entire series thus far? I mean, she's got a very utilitarian
details,
costume.
Details.
Yeah, don't screw with the Catwoman fangirl, man.
Well, obviously.
So, I am really looking forward to this. It's going to be one of those things that I really suck at, because I haven't been good at any kind of Mortal Kombat game since Mortal Kombat 2, but I'm very anxious to see it.
I'm wondering how Hal Jordan's going to do anything to Scorpion.
That is an excellent point right there.
I'm actually seeing him being able to use his willpower as a shield against, like, as a block against the spear. I'm picturing that right now.
Yeah, but the spear is
The spear itself isn't yellow. It's his fist that's yellow.
Yeah.
Ah, but in current continuity, Hal Jordan is the greatest of the Green Lanterns, and he has defeated the yellow impurity that was Sinestro. And I'm probably going to have Devin emailing me saying, ha, yes, you are a Green Lantern fan. So, actually,
not a Green Lantern fan.
Hmm?
Who's not a Green Lantern fan? Everyone loves Green Lantern.
You for not knowing that they just knocked the Parallax Impurity, like, all to hell. I said Sinestro Impurity earlier, didn't I? I should
yes,
be shot for that.
I will ignore certain aspects of continuity in order to make a joke.
Well, I'm sorry, you fail.
Well, obviously. what show am I on, Dana?
My show, and I'm completely awesome at in every way.
All right. Last thing I have to mention, and then I promise I'll shut up mostly. You guys are going to love this. You remember that lovely dance number in Spider-Man 3?
Oh, God. Yes.
Well, somebody in New York got really inspired by that. And on July 28th, there was an open casting call for Spider-Man the Musical. It's going to be directed by Julie Taymor, who won a Tony for The Lion King.
Oh, so and it could actually be good. Excellent.
It could. The score, interestingly enough, will be done by Bono and The Edge from U2. Enough said.
No.
Bono, have you not ruined enough things in my life?
No. All right. Well, we'll keep a close eye on that and see how that goes.
And everything that
I'm thinking, Mercy Cure at this point, man.
I'm really looking forward to. I'm not actually obviously going to be able to see it because I don't live in New York and have no plans to travel there. But any New York listeners, we're going to keep everybody apprised of this. And I would love when it comes out, probably next year or so. I'd love to hear how this turns out. Because it
could
really
go a different way. If anybody is able to go see on Broadway the Spider-Man musical, please give us a review.
I can just see it now. Oh, man.
It sucks.
It isn't right, it isn't fair. I think that spider wasn't there. Hey, I am wearing underwear.
Over my pants.
Well, it'd really be interesting if the musical is based on the Ultimate continuity. Because
ooh,
I think that would be pretty cool.
That would be good. I am a fan of the Ultimate continuity.
Speculation abounds, and
yes.
Anyway, that's
speculate.
That is all I have to contribute for this episode, which is probably running pretty long at this point.
I do believe that draws us to a close. We're about to hit the 1 hour and 30 minute mark, the longest Made of Fail episode to date.
See what happens when you add another person. We add another 30 minutes to it.
Yeah.
Even though you talked about, five of those minutes.
You fell off your chair about
the
other 10.
I'm not very interesting, and you just had so many interesting things for me to comment about.
And why are we hiring you? You're supposed to be my replacement for a little while next month. Yeah, step up your game, man. Get some more sodium going.
Oh, can I not have one bad show?
No.
No.
Well, obviously not. I'm already being fired.
We love you, Adam.
Out of a cannon into the sun.
You did a wonderful job, Adam. This was
Yay,
a lot of fun.
Positive reinforcement.
Anyway, this is drawing to a close.
Spanking.
Yes, I am Kevin.
Like I said, positive reinforcement. I'm Adam.
I'm still Batman.
And this was Made a Fail. Good night.
He saw the operation you tried to pull today, but your humiliation means he still votes nay. And now assassination is just the only way. There will be blood, it might be yours, so go kill someone, sign that horse.
I'm Batman.